And if you would, turn with me to Matthew chapter 5. We'll finish the lesson that we began last week. Matthew chapter 5. If you'll recall from our time together that Jesus has taught his disciples, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you shall in no wise enter the kingdom of heaven. And then he goes on in six different areas of concern to demonstrate the difference between believing the way the scribes and the Pharisees and teachers of the law believed and taught, and the way God the Father would teach in Jesus Christ, God the Son, with us. We first looked at anger. Some have murder in their translations. Then we looked at lust, and then we looked at divorce. And we learned these three things as we talked about fakers and faithers. Not looking for accurate grammar, looking for accurate truth. Fakers are haughty while faithers are humble. And that's what we learned from our discussion of anger. From our discussion on lust, we learned that fakers are externalists. They try to keep the outside looking good, while faithers are internalists. They realize the problems that we face, struggles with sin, temptation, come from inside, not outside. Finally, with divorce, when hurt comes, fakers say me first, while faithers say me last. And we discussed those three things. And that brings us to the last three that we'll discuss briefly this morning. And that is taking oaths, retaliation, and loving our enemies. So with regard to oaths, Jesus said this. Again, you've heard that it was said of those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. There were different grades of swearing, not cursing, but making a promise. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. When I was drafted into the service, January 2nd, 1973, or 71, I took this verse literally. So after we got off the bus, we were greeted with a person who said to us that he would be our mother, our girlfriend, our teacher, take care of all of our needs, and we would only do what he said when he said, as often as he said, in the way that he said it, and we were to say, yes, Sergeant. Now, he was just trying to run roughshod over us. There was just a little bit of attitude in me that kind of sat up, actually stood up inside, and said, I'm not sure I'm going down that road with you. Now, I wanted to get along because I didn't want my time in a service to be bad, and I was taught to be respectful to those who were over me, and indeed he was. But there was a part of me that just kind of, I'm not sure about this. So as soon as we did that, then we went and got all the hair cut off. I could have saved him a lot if I would only be abducted now. And then they gave us the clothes they wanted us to wear. Everybody had a shade of green. It was kind of dull and boring. Then we had our dress greens that they gave us. And they gave us all sorts of things, none of which was really helpful at the time, except for our boots and our clothes. And then they marched us to an induction service. This is where everybody was put in a large room, and you had to recite an oath of service to your country. I never did really understand why they did that, because we were there because we were told to be there. And if we didn't want to be there, we would have run to Canada. Or we'd have cut off a finger or something else. We were there because we were complying with what they demanded. What do we have to take an oath for? But I remembered this passage, and I think it might have been more because I was standing up on the inside than any spiritual reason, but I said, I can't take oaths. So I did this. They don't like you to do that in their service. They want to tell you what's going on. You can't ask questions about what's going on. But I didn't know that yet. Yes, troop, what do you want? He didn't swear at me, and I thought that was good. I said, I can't take an oath. All of you who cannot take an oath because of religious reasons, please go over to that room. And about six of us went over there. So we went in there, and we stood, and he said, for those of you who have a religious obligation to take an oath, you don't have to take one. So when you promise to serve faithfully in the service, we won't ask you to say, so help me God. But just say the other words. So in their mind, they thought it was in our mind that if you make a promise and you put God's name with it, that means it's going to stick. And that's what I believed. But as time has passed, I understand that that's not what God was talking about. So, and they don't do this much anymore, that they have, but they have for a long time. When you testify in court, which I've had to do before, as a witness for the defense, or not the prosecution, but for the defense, you put your hand on a Bible, like that makes it more solemn, and you say, I pledge to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. Now, they've taken that kind of out, at least the last one I was in. Do you promise to tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And yeah. So I thought that it was the formula that was the critical issue. But Jesus is not teaching that we cannot say, so help me God. He's trying to teach that our integrity should be so vitally pure that when we just say yes or no, there is no need to attach anything to it to try to persuade the listener that you're serious about what you're saying. Most of us live in a culture, and we sometimes have this attitude, that some or all of the people around us at a particular moment are trying to take advantage of us. And we want them to promise that they won't. It's the reason we have contracts that we draw up and sign our name. It's a promissor that we will abide by what we said we will do. Now, when I was growing up, and I would listen to my dad say something about maybe renting a farm from another guy for us to farm as a sharecropper, they would simply shake on it. Wouldn't have to promise anything. Tommy, I'd like, that was my dad's name, Tom. Tommy, I'd like for you to take care of this 160 down the road if you would like to. Dad would say yes. They'd shake on it, and that was the end of it. No contracts, didn't need it. Nobody's going to cheat anybody. But that's changed. And now we try to persuade our hearers that we're serious about what we're saying, that we're really telling the truth. They say, well, I'm not sure I do that. Okay, what's this? What? Pinky swear. Yeah. Now, we've tried to take the edge off of that and call it now pinky promise. What does that have to do with anything? We think if we join our pinkies that that makes the arrangement that we're testifying to more solemn? How about this one? And we're just going to play a little game. I'm not going to say the words. I'm just going to act it out. What's that one? Cross my heart and hope to die. Poke a needle in my eye. I mean, you talk about something that's ridiculous. I hope to die? That's like lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake. We do ridiculous things. How about this one? Understand, I'm not saying this literally. I'm just using it as an example. I swear to God. It's an effort to call something else into testimony to convince someone else that what you're saying is true when you doubt that they're going to buy what you're saying. It's the same thing with just, I promise, I promise, I promise. You don't have to say that. Jesus said, if your integrity is the quality that I want it to be, you simply say yes, and you say no. And that's all that's needed. Anything more than that comes from the evil one. We don't put that kind of solemnity with it, but that's how serious it is. We should be people that if we say yes, that's exactly what we mean. And if we say no, that's exactly the way it is. And we don't need to go beyond that. I realize functioning in our world, you have to sign contracts and stuff like that. But it should not be for us. You give someone your word, it is your word. And so we learn this. Fakers are about show, while faithers are about substance. Fakers want to make a show of things, like they can say something that's going to convince you that they're more than they are. You can see this on full display right now in Washington, D.C. So many fakers trying to prove that the lies they're telling are actually truth. And trying to use people that have been dead for 300 years to prove their argument. This is ridiculous. We should have people who are so concerned about their integrity that if they say yes, that's what it means, and if they say no, that's what it means, and there's nothing else there. How much better would our world be if we were consciously aware that when we speak, we do have a judge who's listening to every word? And he's deciding what your integrity is really like. He tests the motives. He sees the heart. He's the one we should be concerned about. We don't need to call him in to witness. He already is, but he's the judge. Next, we look at retaliation. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a... I once heard a kindergartner say this. Jesus says, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I don't know what they thought they heard, but an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And we're not going to be externalists here. We're going to be internalists. We're not going to do things for a show. We're going to do things that are substantive. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. In those days, all of that went on. Roman soldiers, if you were near them, could grab you and force you, constrain you, to carry their pack for 1 mile. That was the law. Jesus is going beyond that. Instead of kicking dirt and kicking rocks and muttering under your breath, you simply say, would it be okay if I carry it 2 miles? That would shock the soldier. Not to make a show of it. Look at me. But rather, let me serve you. And so we learn, fakers get even, while faithers give help. Over the past few years, because of our proximity to the interstate, we have had, it's kind of dwindled away because the police department has been much more active with people here in town, people who come to the door of a church and ask for money. But we would get almost one a day. And they would start, you know, traveling to northern Wisconsin. I'm trying to get home. We've had car trouble. We need some money to be able to make it the rest of the way. And after a while, I kind of got the same story, and I began thinking, you know, they're lying to me. They're not telling me the truth. And so I would begin asking them questions. Would you mind giving me a phone number of someone who lives there where you're going so I can verify that you're telling me the truth? And then I felt kind of self-conscious about that. And I just struggled internally about that. So I started to say, and I got to the place where I just said to them, look, don't lie to me. I'm going to give you some help. So don't lie to me. That just make it worse because God's keeping track. Now some of that's dwindled off. But I can remember growing up, we had an interesting Sunday evening church service. There was a guy sitting in the parking lot when we came to church, and Dad was talking to him. We went inside. Dad reached in his pocket and gave the guy that was driving the car some money. One of our family members, extended family, asked him what he was doing. Dad said, well, there was a guy there that had a baby with a fever, and they were asking for money, and I gave him some. Now, the rest of the evening was discussing whether or not Dad did the right thing by giving money to someone everybody else thought was taking advantage of him. And I thought that was so senseless. I thought, as a boy, well, why would you even argue about that? Even if he didn't have a child with a fever, evidently he needed the money enough to come up with that idea. Though his wife was sitting, well, you assume it was his wife and a baby, just give him the money. It's up to God after that. Give to the one who has to borrow from you. We can become so spiritually sensitive that we become like a Pharisee. And we want everyone to prove how worthy they are of receiving our help. Like we look down our nose at them. I understand stewardship, so I don't need anyone to take me to task about that. And we've already prayed this morning that those who distribute funds here do it faithfully. But there is something to be said for having an open pocket with those who are in need. Isn't there? So when people are trying to take advantage of us, we don't get even. We just give help. Even when it's not required of us. There's a little book out there called God's Psychiatry. It's written by Charles Allen, doctor. And he had several stories in there about patients he was seeing. There was one man came in and he had a bunch of physical issues. And we were trying to trace it down. And after a series of tests and several weeks, Dr. Allen discovered that there was no physical reason for his physical problems. And so he decided, well, this could be spiritual, at least emotional. So he started probing. And he got to the place where he said this, are you bitter toward anyone? And I guess when he said that the man just, I mean, the floodgates opened, and he started spewing all kinds of things out about one man. Things he had done wrong, things he had offended him by, and all of these things that he offended the man by. And he ended by saying this, I will get even with that man if it's the last thing I do. And Dr. Allen wrote, it was. You see, when we try to get even like fakers do, we're actually poisoning ourselves. That's not what God wants us to do. We are not people who get even. We are people who give help, regardless of the circumstance. Finally, love. It's almost like everything's been building to this point. You have heard that it was told, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And we learn this truth. Fakers limit their love, while faithers love to the limit. I was taught this at a young age. I was in my teens by this time. Dad had bought 40 acres of ground east of the farm that we lived on. And in his mind, and in my mind at the time, that was going to be the quote-unquote the home place for me. I was going to get a degree in ag, and I was going to buy my dad's farm and the equipment and the cattle and start my farming career. And so in the process, when Grandpa died, we and Grandma moved. We took Grandma's old house and we drug it 4 miles and set it up on a new foundation on this patch of ground. Then we brought over the hog farrowing house, which I was already using, and that was going to be for our breeding stock. And then Dad built a brand new metal building on that property. At that time, it was the custom, because of wind, to raise the door, the big sliding doors, overhead doors that you have where you get your machinery in, off the ground about 2 feet, maybe a little bit more. That would allow air to pass through and whatever. But it wasn't secure. One night we got a call about 2 in the morning, one of these, and said our shed was on fire. So Dad and I rushed down, and it had already engulfed the entire shed, and it was already melted through the roof, and it was so intense that the glass out of the brand new self-propelled combine we bought, brand new John Deere combine, the glass had melted out. It was that intense because there were 2,000 bales of hay that we had stored there for our cattle over the winter. It's just one place we stored hay. It was an intense fire. We called the police later because there wasn't any electricity to the shed. We couldn't imagine any reason why it would have caught on fire because the hay was dry. There was no problem with that. And when they came out to investigate, they found a set of tracks going into the shed, sliding under one of the doors. It was an arsonist. It was only circumstantial evidence, but we traced to the arsonist. But it was only circumstantial. It wasn't concrete. It was somebody that Dad had run against for a political office in our community, who had lost. And they had, we assume, slid under the door and lit the hay on fire and then ran to get back at Dad. It was a terrible, terrible trauma for our family. And Dad couldn't sustain that kind of loss. But here's what I never heard. I never heard my dad speak ill of that man. Me? I'd have been publishing it all over the county. I'd go to the restaurant for breakfast and say, hey, I don't know what you think about, and I could call his name, but I'm not going to. You can't imagine what we think he did to me. I mean, just slander his name all over the county. Dad could have done that. And, as far as I was concerned, with just cause. But it would not have been loving. My dad was about this last portion. And so should we be. We love to the limit. We don't limit our love. Now you say, well, there's so many times when We have to be careful about what we do. The only thing we really have to be careful about is bring honor to God's name. Nothing else really matters, does it?